Please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and to help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker, or indeed any AA member, be identified by full name in any published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential into our effort to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles become before personalities. The long form of AA's 11th tradition says our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. In keeping with this principle, please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable AA members on websites accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages on social networking sites. I'd like to introduce our panel members. We have Cherry, Molly, and Tim. Let's go ahead and welcome Cherry up.
Hi, I'm Cherry. I'm an alcoholic drug addict. Oh, yeah, I get to talk about relationships. First of all, when I told my friends and the people I work with that I was on the relationships panel, they all laughed. They're like, what did they get you for? Comic relief? Yeah. I mean, to be perfectly honest. And I thought, well, this, I'll just tell you the truth. I was never one for the romantic relationship in AA. I was not. I never wanted to get married. I never wanted to have children. And, of course, God decided he was going to laugh at that. I had one of the greatest miracles of my life about a year and a half ago. My son was born. I was 43 years old. My sobriety date is June 10th, 1990. So I have walked through these rooms, and I have watched and looked, and I have taken notes and gone, I don't want to do that. And marriage was the top of that list. And that's okay, because we all get choices. When we drop drinking and alcohol, we get choices. My primary relationship is with my higher power. That's where it's at. That has made me happy for 23 years. I am happy with that. Does not mean that I don't love my son's father. I do. But God is enough. And when God is enough, the relationships that are supposed to be in your life will appear. The things that are supposed to happen in your life will appear. My son is an absolute miracle. Truly. I was never supposed to have children. Again, it was quite the joke when they said I was going to be on the relationship panel. Because I like to fancy myself that I have this reputation as a free spirit. And relationships, in my mind at that time, were a thing of bondage. Because when you're in a relationship, the romantic kind, there are many different types of relationships, first of all. And I would highly suggest working on those first. Your relationship with your higher power, your relationship with your family, your relationship with the fellowship. All those things. So when God decides that you will have that elusive romantic relationship, you'll have something to fall back on. Because the elusive romantic relationship can be very hard, and it requires a lot of work. And being willing to do that work means that you have to face your own character defects. You know, I once said to my sponsor, I said, so-and-so, she's been married 3 times, and I've never been married. And I said, I go, I must have commitment issues. And she said, no, it's quite the opposite. When you commit, you're going to commit fully. And that's what it's going to take. And I can't tell you if I'm there yet. God's going to make that decision for me. I believe in continuing to do the steps. And I have listened in the rooms to the people who have been married 30, 40 years. And they have all said the same thing. That it's God, you, and the other person in the relationship. That's how it works. And that also it requires a lot of surrender. A surrendering of will. I am very strong-willed. Or I like to think I am. That could be my ego talking. It's the surrendering of ego. Because your relationship is a reflection of your character defects. And every character defect can be turned into a character asset. That's where the work is. I'm stubborn. That'll also make me patient. You know, I put so much time not into the romantic relationships, but into the relationships that I have with others. The relationship with the newcomer, the sponsor-sponsee relationship, that has been a blessing. That has saved my butt more than once. The relationship with my family, making those amends, that has helped me tremendously along the path. Being happy and joyous and free, as it says in the book, it's an absolute fact. But you have to choose that. You have to choose to be happy, joyous, and free. And that requires facing yourself and filling the hole in your heart with love instead of with another person. It tells in the book, romances and finances. All the old timers will tell you, romances and finances. And then when you mix the two, they can be deadly because they make resentments. And those resentments can only be overcome by the steps and your higher power. That's the relationship you need to work on. Another thing my sponsor always told me, she goes, you know, as she watched me go through multiple boyfriends early in recovery, oh, he was the one. And she would laugh. She goes, you know, Sherry, you're going to God alone. You're not going with another person, so you better work on that one. Save my ass. That's all I really have about relationships. It's all God.
Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and welcome up Molly.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Molly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Molly. We love you, Molly. Lots and lots and lots. And whole bunches.
Thank you for the welcome. If at any point I'm not talking loud enough, let me know. Okay. So my sobriety date's July 3rd, 2004. And I had nothing to do with that. That was all my higher power. I didn't decide to be willing. I didn't decide I'm going to do this. I was gifted with this huge amount of willingness to do whatever it took to stay sober. And I'm so grateful that I was asked to talk on this topic, and I got to do research, and I got to get closer to my higher power in that process. And I'm so grateful for that. But I'm just going to start. I looked up some stuff in our literature, and I'm just going to talk about that. And so the topic of our meeting is developing and maintaining healthy relationships. And I didn't know how to do that when I got here. And like Cherry was talking about, sponsorship and a higher power. And, for me, doing the steps is what brought me there, And step 9, so we make amends, right? And I've been this diseased person for so long. And that's the first step in setting those relationships right. We find out what our part was, and then we go make it right. And then there are living amends that we make to family and friends and everyone else that we've injured along the way. And that's, the first step, And through the steps, I get to know a higher power. And that higher power, to thine own self be true. That higher power helps me learn to set boundaries. I talk about it with somebody that's been there. And I learn, how do I talk to him about this? How do I talk to this person? Like, what do I do? What is right? What's not right? And I learn that through connecting with my higher power, through doing the steps. That's exactly it, is through connecting with my higher power and doing the steps. So God shows me how. I learned to meditate when I was pretty new, and I went to this big book workshop, and the gentleman there talked about listening to our God voice. And there's two voices inside. There's one that says, shut up, the music's too loud, no one's going to hear your message, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then there's the God voice that's just love, be present, listen, stay connected, I'm here. And that's my higher power's voice. And that is the voice that when I choose to connect to that, I'm set free over and over and over again. And my relationships get better over and over and over again. And when I'm working with a newcomer or talking to anybody and I don't know what to do, and I tap into that voice, once again, I get to do the right action. So let's see here. So I'm going to read some stuff out of the 12 and 12 on amends. So when we go to make amends, good judgment will suggest that we ought to take our time. While we may be quite willing to reveal the very worst, we must be sure to remember that we cannot buy our own peace of mind at the expense of others. So from the get-go, I've got to be thinking of, how can I benefit this person? First, we will wish to be reasonably certain that we are on the AA beam. So I don't want to, anytime I go and make amends, of course I talk to my sponsor first. But we come in here and we're all excited and we want to go out and make all these amends, but if we're not really here, we're just going to cause more damage, so we're developing that trust again. Let's see. And I'm going to go to the big book now, and I'm going to talk about sexual relationships. In the big book on 68, it says, now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling here, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's easy to get way off track. And it tells us on 69, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals. So I'm going to my higher power and saying, what do you want? What is this supposed to look like? And I'm praying about it, and I'm turning it over. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given, and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm. And then it tells me, in meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. So I'm constantly going to God. And in here, it talks about how, like a lot of what Cherry talked about, we have financial issues, we have sexual issues, and we wouldn't be human if we didn't. It's alcoholism, and it's also our humanness. And learning to go to my higher power when I'm in an argument or when I'm, in financial fear, developing that connection is what saved me over and over and over again. And on page 70, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. you were going to get drunk. And I remember, like, being early on, and I was in a relationship on and off for, like, my first 4 years of sobriety. And I kept trying to make it work, you know. And my program was first, because I remember, like, over and over and over again reading this and being like, okay, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And I would constantly go to God, and I wasn't clear, but I would constantly continue to work my program, and I would constantly go to God. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are the facts of our experience. To sum it up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for strength to do the right thing. And I would say that prayer over and over and over again. And then it tells me, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. Boom. You know? Because sex is going to be very troublesome. It's the nature of it. You know, it's the nature of sexual relations. It's the nature of me. Like, I've never been able to have a healthy relationship until I've gotten sober with anybody, with my family, with my friends, you know, with significant others. And this tells me the solution. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves and quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. I'm going to share my experience with sexual relations. Alonzo and I have been married almost 3 years. We've been dating 4 years. And we were getting to know each other. We were friends. I didn't know that. I don't know. I wasn't, like, searching for somebody. I had turned my relationships over, and I had found a woman that had what I wanted, and I did what she said. And I had done this several times before, but for some reason, this is the time that it worked. And she said, write down everything you want in a partner. So I did that, you know? And then she said, you have to become that. So I wrote the statements into statements about me instead of about, you know, he will do this or whatever. It was about me, and I read it 4 times in the morning and 4 times at night, and I took it with me, and I did my best to practice that in every single relationship and to try to be that person. And I had done my steps several times, you know, but I was still failing in these areas, and things were still coming up. And I did this, and I remember Alonzo and I had started a book study just because we both had similar interests. And the top thing on my relationship ideal was to pray and meditate with a partner. And he opened us up in, like, a free flow prayer. And I was like, holy crap. You know, like, I just, my ideal started going off. And I was seeing these things in him. And throughout our relationship, like, we have had to come back to God being the center. And I remember praying with him alone, like, on his couch one day. And I just started crying because I never had that experience with somebody. You know, that level of intimacy, that level of vulnerability. And it's beautiful. It really is beautiful. And communicating about, we were, you know, the first time we kissed, I think it was like our third date. And, you know, there was some stuff that came up for me, and I was scared, and I had difficulty, you know, drawing boundaries with sex, you know, and doing stuff I wasn't comfortable with, and yada, yada, yada. And we had to have a talk. You know, and I prayed about it, I wrote about it, I probably talked to somebody about it, and I got everything clear, and then I called him. I think it was like Halloween, you know, 4 years ago. And I said, this is what's going on for me, and this is what I need from you. And he heard me. He didn't shut me down, but he heard me, and then his actions mirrored what he said. He did what he said. You know, and so that's the kind of, like, that was me learning to be intimate. So in the past, I would have just, like, let that go, or I would have done something I wasn't comfortable with, or I would have acted out sideways, you know? But confronting the issue right there and learning to have that communication, I think has saved us. So I want to talk about my father. He died a few years ago of pancreatic cancer, and we had I was resentful at him in the beginning when I got sober. There was a lot of, like, challenging history. My parents were married and divorced, but my dad was married and divorced 4 times, and he wasn't present a lot when I was a kid growing up, and so I blamed him for a lot of stuff, and I had a lot of built-in reactions to things based on seeking a male, you know. in my life. And I was able to work through a lot of that stuff and make amends to him. And the healing that took place was really phenomenal. And it was funny because while I was walking through like all these abandonment issues, it was like a whole, like I was totally detached from, that was totally detached from my relationship with my dad. So like none of that stuff got in the way of me being present during his chemo and radiation, me being present every time he went to the hospital, me loving him like completely and unconditionally. So it's just really cool how the steps and prayer meditation and my higher power made that possible. My sister, I love my sister so much. Oh my goodness. But she's not like my best female friend in AA would be. You know, like I can't talk to her about my feelings. You know, I can't talk to her about a lot of stuff. And early on, like we'd have phone conversations and like the phone would get hung up, you know, or like she would rage and I would start setting boundaries and it was so foreign to her. She was like, what the hell? Why are you telling me this AA crap? You know? And you know, slowly stuff started to change. And with my dad, my sister didn't get to have the healing that my dad and I got to have because of this program. And she went off a couple times on the phone with me. And I was able to just like love her, let her do what she had to do, and then say, okay, I gotta get off the phone now. I love you. I'll talk to you later. You know? And today, like, our relationship is better than it's ever been. You know, and I've had to practice those same things. When stuff comes up that I know I need to talk to her about, I pray about it, I meditate on it, I write on it, and then we, you know, I say, are you available? Let's go have dinner, and we talk about it. You know, and it's funny because my sister is changing too. And I know that my higher power in me, like, that's all I can worry about. But it's really cool to watch the miracles that are taking place in her life. It's really cool to watch her soften and to forgive me, you know? So, anyways, I've practiced a lot of getting out of unhealthy relationships. You know, right, when we get sober, we have to change our playgrounds and our playmates, you know? And I had to sever a lot of those friendships. Like, I couldn't be around certain people without using and drinking. Like, I didn't have the capacity to do that. I tried. It didn't work. So I had to sever some relationships and I had to, you know, make amends and for my part, but I couldn't be around people that were always under the influence. One of the gals that worked with me early on, one of my first sponsors, there was this drama triangle between her, this guy that I was dating, and me. And I would tell her stuff and then she would tell him. You know, and it was like just really like uncomfortable and not and dishonest and not safe. And I had to end that sponsorship relationship, you know? And I had to tell her why. And that was really hard to do. And I think I was, I don't know, like 9 months sober or something. So anyway, there's been a lot of boundary setting in my program and in my sobriety. And you know, I need to talk to a sponsee about some stuff. And I prayed about it, and I meditated on it, and I wrote it out, and I, like, you know, sent her a text and say, hey, when are you available? You know? And it's difficult stuff, but we need to talk about it. You know? I want to share on step 12 out of the 12 and 12. There's a lot of really good stuff in our literature. So starting on page 109, I'm just going to jump around. Even the newest of newcomers finds unredeemed rewards as he tries to help his brother alcoholic, the one who is even blinder than he. This is indeed the kind of giving that actually demands nothing. So, like, by working the 12 steps, right, I get to step 12, and at some point, I start seeking out people to sponsor, you know, and I start having these intimate relationships with more people than just my sponsor and my friends, but I start learning how to connect with sponsees. And that grows my God. His own character defects may be gravely defective, but he somehow knows that God has enabled him to make a mighty beginning. And he senses that he stands at the edge of new mysteries, joys, and experiences of which he had never even dreamed. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? So these practicing these principles in all of our affairs, you know, that's my relationship with my employer, you know, with my family, with the girl at the checkout at the grocery store. Can we steadfastly content ourselves with the humbler yet sometimes more durable satisfactions when the brighter, more glittering achievements are denied us? And it talks in here about how in relationships we try to either be better than or less than. How we try to control or we allow ourselves to be controlled, you know? And it talks about how that ground gets leveled and the solution that we find in program. Our demand for emotional security for our own way had constantly thrown us into unworkable relations with other people. Either we tried to play God or dominate those about us, or we insisted upon being over-dependent on them. Our desires for emotional security, wealth, and personal prestige and power, for romance, and for family satisfactions, all these have to be tempered and redirected. When we developed still more, we discovered the best possible source of emotional stability to be God Himself. We found that dependence upon His perfect justice, forgiveness, and love was healthy, and that it would work where nothing else would. If we really depended upon God, we couldn't very well play God to our fellows, nor would we feel the urge wholly to rely on human protection and care. These are the new attitudes that finally brought many of us an inner strength and peace that could not be deeply shaken by shortcomings of others or by any calamity, not of our own making. And it talks about boy meets girl on AA campus, married folks having a higher rate of staying together because of the program. The prospective partners need to be solid AAs and long enough acquainted to know that their compatibility at spiritual, mental, and emotional levels is a fact and not wishful thinking. They need to be as sure as possible that no deep-lying emotional handicap in either will be likely to rise up under later pressures to cripple them. So, the message is, you know, exactly what Cherry said. It's all about God. It's all about working my program. And becoming that person, you know? And I personally, like, my higher power is infinite. It's infinite God, infinite possibilities. Anything's possible. And for me, like, I need to stay in that place of anything's possible and to try to have an open mind. And, like, I knew Alonzo was out there. I don't know. I knew he was out there. And not all of us get married, you know? That's not everybody's story. Not all of us find a significant other, but that was my story, and I had this, this inner knowing, and we were together for 2 weeks, and I knew, like, I just knew, and I'd never known before. There was always an incredible amount of indecision and fear, but because I developed that conscious contact with God, and I had learned to practice these principles in all of my affairs, and setting boundaries, man, you know, am I going to die in this relationship? And then the relationship is going to be the center of my life. Then there's going to be no more Molly, you know? That had happened before. But anyway, I hope you guys got something. Thanks.
And our final panelist tonight, Tim.
Hi everybody, Tim the Alcoholic. Thank you. This is like probably the most interesting and challenging speaking thing that I've ever done. So that's why I'm going to look down into the mic, because I'm going to try and be louder than what's going on behind me. And I'm looking at the recorder and I'm thinking how interesting this is going to sound later when somebody's listening to the recording. Thank you. I think this is probably really awesome because I guess there was supposed to be a guy named Josh that was supposed to be here talking. And Kelly just kind of caught me in the hall and said, "Hey, Josh, didn't you hear? Will you talk?" So it's funny, on this topic, I'm probably really qualified to talk about it as much as I'm really unqualified to talk about it. If there's anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous who has done relationships wrong, it's me. I am bad at relationships. I'm bad at life. But the hope in that statement is that I continue to do the work in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it makes the relationships possible, and it makes living life possible. I think that's probably the most pure message and experience that I've had, that no matter how bad I am at relationships, whether it be the one of the sexual kind, or relationships at work, or in my family, any of those relationships can become possible and sustainable and long-lasting if I continue to do the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because at the end of the day, and I had a sponsor, he used to just drill this into my head. He says it's all about relationships, you know. And of course, being young, when I got here, I was 24, you know, and I could really only think with one head. And I thought when you said relationships, you were only talking about one kind of relationship. And unfortunately, a lot of my character defects that I had practiced before I had gotten sober, which my sobriety date is May 30th, 2004, if those character defects followed me into Alcoholics Anonymous, all my relationship problems, they followed me in here. And actually, when you took the drugs and the alcohol away, my relationship and problems intensified, actually. I could hear half of what was being talked about, and thank you guys both. And I was also listening to the rhythm of the music behind me, and I was noticing this flow. It was like it was kind of going to a low point, and then it was going up, and like the guy was like reaching this big climax, and the crowd was like climaxing with him, and it would stay there for a while, and then it'd go back down. And it seems like there's this big rise and fall of the excitement. And that's what relationships were like for me for so long, was I was just chasing that climax, and it would get there, and it's like, we're here, and I gotta see you tomorrow. And it was just like, it's like, holy crap, you know, like, I was riding a roller coaster, and if I wasn't sitting in here, and it was like probably 5 years ago, I'd probably be on the other side of the wall chasing that type of relationship, because I didn't know any better. And so it's been a really messy process since I got here in 2004. Just a brief snippet of what this part of my life was like before I got sober. I was a very awkward, smart, but very shy kid. And I was chunky, and I was short, and girls didn't like me, and I really liked girls. And then I turned like 16 or 17, and like I hit this growth spurt. Like I grew like 7 inches in the summer, and I lost a bunch of weight, and then like all of a sudden girls started noticing me. And that was where like one of my biggest first resentments with sexual relationships started. I actually got really angry that for years girls didn't notice me, and then all of a sudden, because they saw something that they liked, that they liked me. And that resentment actually carried for many, many years and into Alcoholics Anonymous, the years that I was sober. Because, and the way that that resentment acted itself out or manifested itself was I actually, at times, and I'm not claiming to be a victim here, but I have used my shell, my physical being, I have used it in a way for power and manipulation and relationships, but I've also allowed myself to be used by others in a way, because I was giving them something that they wanted, which was a physical part of me, and that's a very empty thing. And I think it happens to both men and women, whether we realize it or not. We are spiritual beings trapped in this physical shell, and we're looking and we're dying so much to be in love, you know? Like, I just want to love you guys to the core of my being. Like, each and every one of you, you might drive me crazy, but I really deep down just want to love you. I was having a conversation with Alonzo earlier, and it really kind of, you know, something clicked for me. It's like, you know, I got here this weekend, afternoon at about 5:30, and I looked around and I didn't see a lot of people I knew, and I felt like I was in a foreign place. And I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. I hate this place. I want to go. I want to turn around and I want to run. And I was crappy, in a crappy mood for about 4 hours, the first 4 or 5 hours I was here. And then I started to be of service and got outside of myself and started to do some of the things that was shown to me when I first got here in Alcoholics Anonymous and said that I wanted to be sober. And lo and behold, now I'm glad to be here. But what that was about was that's about my intimacy disorder. That is about my spiritual malady. I get here and all I want is to belong. And I come here and I see all these young people that I'm like, I'm getting too old to be here. You know, like, what am I doing? I'm not the same person who started coming to young people's events when I was, you know, 9 years ago. And so I immediately my character defects are like, you gotta run. You don't belong here. And the fact is I do belong here. And don't let what you see on the outside rob you from having a very beautiful experience. And that's kind of where that alone has landed me where I am in my life today as far as relationships and sexual relationships. It's funny that I'm talking on this panel because on September 10th, I just got married for the very first time. Legally married. Which is scary, but it's funny because my wife and I, we share the same birthday. We get, you know, that's what she wanted to do for our birthday, and I said, all right, we'll do that. I just kind of agreed to it. But I'm so happy to be married, and just kind of give you a little bit of story of that. There's so much to share. So when I got to AA, my character defects followed me. I was acting out still sexually in a lot of ways when I got sober. And that was because I was wanting to be loved and I wanted to love you, but I just didn't know how to do it. Like, I thought that if we took our clothes off and we got in bed together that we loved each other. And that defect or that wrongful thinking lasted for a really long time because that acting out gave me an effect that was sort of similar to drugs and alcohol, and it lasted a while in AA, like a good 4 years. And I came into AA and I was in a relationship. I didn't have a sponsor who said don't, you know, he didn't say wait a year. You know, he wanted some entertainment. He wanted to see what was going to happen if he just let me loose. And so I had, you know, a couple relationships. I was 13th stepped a couple times. I don't say that in like a, you know, a bragging kind of a way, but I was literally, I remember having two women 13th step me in my first year of sobriety. So it does go both ways. And I only say that as a man because I think, in my mind, I only think it goes one way, but it doesn't. And so I got into one really meaningful relationship at about a year and a half, 2 years sober, and it was bad to start off with because it was like she had just gotten out of a relationship, and like 2-3 weeks before I just gotten out of a my pattern was is that I date for about 4 or 5 months. When I really got to know you, it was like time to go. Because it was either you were gonna get to know me or I got to know you and I didn't like what I saw. It's like, sleep with you, I could hang out with you for about 3 or 4 months and then it was time to go. You know, because then it was getting too real. And then I would stay, you know, single for a month or two and then I told myself I'm ready or whatever. And so I'd do the pattern again and I couldn't see it, but I could. And so I ended up in this 2-year relationship and I hadn't worked on any of the issues. I hadn't dug deep enough with the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was acting and pretending to be in this relationship, and on the outside we were doing the relationship, but we were miserable. We were fighting. We didn't have the tools. We didn't have the tools to have a meaningful relationship, but like a good alcoholic, both of us being alcoholics, we made it last 2 years, you know, because if it's sick, you gotta drag it out. You know, like, I have this really great, gift of attracting really sick people into my life. Like, I walk into that dance over there and I guarantee you I start googly-eyeing a bunch of girls and I'm gonna draw the attention of like the 10 sickest ones that are in there. That's just like the gift that God gave me. I don't know why, but it's just what, that's what happens. So we didn't have the tools and I started acting out in the relationship and it led me to the next chapter of my sobriety where I was gonna be given some tools. And what happened was that 4.5 years, because of this continuing pattern that I was having, I had to seek outside help because I was working the steps in AA with the sponsor and it wasn't getting any better. And so I ended up in another 12-step fellowship and I'm still an active member of that fellowship. And, you know, and I got busy in there and it's, let me tell you, I am a firm believer in graduate level AA shit. Like, for me, that, the sex, the alcoholism and the drugs, like, I can't even begin to work on my relationship and my sex stuff unless I'm sober. Like, I gotta be clean and sober from drugs and alcohol, or else I ain't working on anything else. So this is where my foundation is. AA is my base. But beyond drinking and all the substances, like, I got some core issues. And I loved what Eric talked about tonight. You know, I am a broken person. Like, long before I started drinking, like, I was broken. And so I get here, I get sober, and you see it, man. Like, people can stay here for 1, 2, 3 years, and then when shit starts getting real, like, they're gone. Like, there's not a whole lot of people sticking around that have 4 or 5. Like, the longer, the later you think, like, there's not, those people aren't here. The shit starts getting real. And, so this was my time at 4.5 years sober. I had to start digging deeper, and this, I found that this was my core issue, was this sex stuff. Dude, I was having sexual dreams when I was like 5 years old. Like, I knew I was a sexual being at a very early age, and that I loved women. That was very apparent to me, and I wanted them to be in my life. But I didn't have models in my life. My parents were, they met at a drug deal. So that just shows you, like, how my life was gonna turn out. Like, I did not have the models. Nobody sat me down. In our public education system, they don't have classes on relationships. I was a 24-year-old guy walking in here in AA, and 5 years later, almost 30, with absolutely no education, knowledge, or skills on how to be in a relationship. So I'm this grown-up guy who's supposed to know what the hell I'm doing, and I have no clue. And I start doing the work. And in the midst of doing the work, I'm getting into more pain because I think I can manage my life. I'm still acting out a little bit, and I'm having to dig deeper and a lot of pain. I haven't experienced as much pain in my life, even with anything, than I have. I haven't hit bottoms like I have with this in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was about 6 or 7 years sober, and I was deep in the pain and misery of this relationship stuff, spiritual sickness, and I was literally ready to commit suicide. Like, I believe it, that you're either gonna drink or you're gonna blow your head off. Like, that's what's gonna happen. Because I was there, and luckily I had people to pull me out of it. And so what it's looked like since then is, how does God get involved with this? In each failed endeavor that I had with relationships, and this is true for all relationships beyond sexual, is that in each failure there's a lesson. It's a matter of whether I'm willing to take the time and do the work to look back and see what those lessons are on the failed relationships. Because it always comes back to me. And I gotta tell you, I didn't understand a lot of things, but in looking at this part of my life, I've come to understand much more. They say it takes 2 to tango, and for a lot of years in AA, getting sober and working harder on this stuff, I was looking really hard at myself when it came to relationships and sexual relationships, and I beat myself up. Why do you keep doing this? Why do you, you know, you're a sober man, you're not supposed to be treating, you know, others this way, and I was just really hard on myself. And the fact is like, I am so sensitive, and I am such a loving creature, like, I'm a child of God. And I was my biggest enemy in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I was killing myself by exposing myself to these sick relationships with these sick people. So when I say it takes 2 to tango, you gotta look at the people was good enough. Just give me the hot one that will look good for a good 10 years. Like, give me the trophy wife, and I'll maintain. But the fact is that's not enough for me. It's not enough for me. And those were the ideals that I somehow got implanted into my brain when I was a certain age. And so I had to realize that there's two to tango, and I got involved with a lot of sick people, and that freed me up a whole lot, because it helped me see that the line stops somewhere, that at some point I can see that, yes, I attract sick people, but I can say no. Like, I can say no to you in a relationship. Like, you're not okay for me. And I didn't have that tool, and I don't know, there might be some people that struggle with that, but you have the right to say no. You have the right to have dignity and respect for yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous, and at six, even still at 6, 7 years, I did not have that. And my higher power has changed me in that way. He has put men, and I didn't believe it for the longest time when they said, let us love you until you can love yourself. No wonder it took me so much time. 6, 7 years or whatever, like, you guys truly have loved me until I've been able to become to love myself just a little bit, and that little bit is enough. Like, to be able to love myself today is an amazing thing, because I can stand here before you today, I still care about what you think about me, the way I look, and so I put a lot of effort into this still, but not as much as I used to. Because I don't give as much of a fuck anymore. Like, I still give a fuck, but I just don't give as much of a fuck. Because I love myself. Like, I know that when I go to sleep tonight, like, I'm a good husband because I didn't cheat on my wife today. I told her that I loved her, and because I treated all of you with dignity and respect. And I can do my 11th step today and be like, yeah, me and God had a good fucking day today. You know what I mean? So that's what it's about. You know, when the ladies are talking about my relationship with God comes first, it's my relationship with myself and my relationship with you. That's what my relationship with my higher power looks like. How is my relationship with you, and how is my relationship with myself? Am I eating right? Am I getting enough sleep? Am I taking care of myself? Because damn it, I'm worth it. And when I was, you know, in my first few years sober, I was the guy staying up, drinking all the energy drinks, smoking all the cigarettes, and that is not, for me, what looking and taking care of myself and loving myself is like. It's just not. And so I know this is a different crowd in here probably that's not doing that, so we can say it probably a little bit more freely, but that's the message that we have to carry to those that aren't getting it, right? And remember that it is about love. Like, they're searching the same kind of love that we are. They might be doing it in a way that we don't approve of, but it's the same way I was doing it back then, right? And so, I love myself, yay. And just the last story I'll tell is how I met my wife, which is an amazing story, because I was still in the middle of a lot of pain. It was like the tail end of it all. Angela saw me there. And I was still having struggles with, like, the wrong people and the wrong relationships. Prior to that, about 6, 8, 9 months prior to that, one of my journeys in my spirituality and sobriety has been, I'm a seeker, I'm always trying to find God. And in my first 2 or 3 years, I went back to the church. Like, I chose to do that. I chose to go look for God in a church. So I went back to what my boyhood ritual was to go back to the Catholic Church. And slowly but surely I found that, that there were some pretty healthy people there, and I knew that maybe I could find myself a wife here or whatever. But I didn't know how to do that. Not thinking one day, I know that just like what happens in church, you have no idea, it's so closely related to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like synonymous. So one day I'm sitting in mass, and they're up at the mic, and they're like, oh, we need service people to do a youth ministry thing. And I'm like, alright, I got the time. So I go talk to them, and I get involved, and I'm like so scared, because I'm like an alcoholic, I don't want them to know who I am, but I want them to know who I am. And I'm meeting with all these normal people outside of AA, and this is where I meet Nancy, and she is not the person that I would chase around over there. She is not the woman that I'd be over there running around chasing her skirt. real date, not one where you end up in each other's bed at the end of the day. And we actually courted each other for a significant period of time, purposefully. Like, we had to purposefully talk about it, kind of like Molly. Like, we had to actually plan, like, I want to love you and date you, but in order to do that, because I'm sick, like, we have to do it in this kind of a little bit of a way. And it's okay to do that. We're a little bit different. We're not like normal people, and we have to act as such. And slowly but surely, like, the pivotal point for us was that, you know, I spent my eighth year anniversary in AA. I spent it in intensive outpatient treatment for sex addiction because I was still, like, really screwed up here. And at the end of that work that I did, a year's worth of work, I met with a therapist, and my soon-to-be wife had her own therapist, and we got together in a room with our two therapists, and I laid it all on the table. Like, this is everything that I've done. This is who I really am. I'm standing naked before you. This is me and my God. Like, I'm standing before you. Please take me and accept me. I've never done this before. And took that risk, and knowing that she might just turn and walk away, and she didn't. And we've been working on it. Like, it was really hard for her to hear a lot of that stuff. We knew that. But we've been able to walk past it and treat each other with dignity and respect with the tools that we've been given, and love each other and be able, it's so comforting to be able to have somebody that when you're going through hard times, you can look at them and say, I love you, I'm committed to you, I'm not running away, and they say the same thing back, you know, because I have those abandonment issues, I have all that brokenness is still there. But, and so it's led to the point where we're now married, and that's a beautiful thing. So, it's worth all the freaking pain that I went through, I can tell you that much. Like, it's short, our relationship is still very short, and I know we have, like, so much years and work ahead of us because she drives me crazy. Like, we're the perfect amount of crazy for each other. That's what I like to say. But we are committed, and we have our own higher powers. And as long as I can keep myself out of the equation and remember it's not about me, it's about how can I serve my partner? How can I remember that she's not there to serve me? and just remember that at the end of the day, it's a lot about humility, and I hate humility. So it's really been an honor to be able to share this evening. Thank you.
Let's give another round of applause to our panelists. And we'll go ahead and close up with the responsibility part.